Cynthia Fringe, you're listening to The World Transformed 1.5 on Fast Forward Radio. I'm Phil Bauermaster, and I'm pleased to welcome you to this, the 10th edition of The World Transformed 1.5. This is our special Bridge the Gap show, the show that goes between the original World Transformed series, which ran in 2009, and The World Transformed 2, which will be coming up a little bit later this year. In this series, we've been reviewing the major transformations that are occurring in our world, and we've been talking about what impact they have on us both as a society, as a civilization, and as individuals, and what part we can each be playing in them. I should note that we're starting at an odd time tonight. We're an hour late. We've been having trouble with the Blog Talk Radio time scheduling all week. It's caused a certain amount of trouble with all the shows we've done this week, so I apologize for the odd time of the show, and that has forced me to do a live show this evening. We're not pre-recorded, so just a quick program note: the show will only air once this evening. Those who have gotten used to hearing me give the entire monologue and then give it again, sorry, you'll only get it once, but it will then immediately be on archive. So feel free to listen to it as many times as you like, and I encourage that. Well, we talked last week about the age of the possible, and that led to this week's topic, which is the age of the impossible. So if the age of the possible referred to the coming era of testing the limits of what's possible, what in the world could we mean by the age of the impossible? Well, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's the coming era when we reach the very boundaries of what's possible, as in the age of the possible, and then we move beyond those boundaries. Now, this sounds like I'm contradicting what I said last week, but about how we define what's possible, but give me a chance. Stick with me here for a minute. I think where the possible and the impossible are concerned, we can have our cake and eat it, which, of course, is not possible. What I'm calling the age of the impossible flows naturally from the age of the possible. It's an extension of the age of the possible. So here tonight, I'll look at three different ways we can, in fact, achieve the impossible. First, we should note that, in one sense, the age of the impossible is really just a restatement or a refinement of the age of the possible. Last week, I gave the example of Lord Kelvin's rather unfortunate assessment of heavier-than-air flight. He said it was impossible, coming just a few years before the Wright brothers showed the world how it's done in Kitty Hawk. We shouldn't be too hard on Lord Kelvin, and we should remember that he was not just some schmo. He was a leading scientific voice of his day. Kelvin was a significant contributor, and our understanding of how best to measure temperature, even today, owes a lot to his work. It's important to note that even an important scientist, someone like Kelvin, can misunderstand how rapidly and thoroughly the landscape of the impossible is vanishing. So this first method of achieving the impossible is merely to do what the Wright brothers did, redefine the, quote, impossible as possible. Their achievement on that brisk December day was magnificent, but it was hardly unique in its reclassifying of a previously impossible event. Earlier this week, many of us celebrated Yuri's night, the anniversary of Yuri Gagarin's world-changing space flight. Obviously, anyone who thought that heavier-than-air flight was never going to happen would have given zero odds to human beings ever traveling into outer space. And there were many naysayers on space flight well beyond the time of Lord Kelvin and well beyond the time of the Wright brothers. There was a magnificent period beginning in the late 40s with Chuck Yeager breaking the sound barrier and culminating in 1969 with Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walking on the surface of the moon, wherein the, quote, impossible was being achieved on a regular basis. Aeronautics and space exploration are one area where the impossible has been repeatedly achieved, but hardly the only one. The term impossible has been applied to accomplishments as diverse as circumnavigating the globe and running the four-minute mile. Throughout history, the dominoes have fallen time and time again, and they'll continue to fall. If you want to put together a list of major scientific and technological achievements that will be made in the coming years, the first step is easy. Look for the items that some are insisting are absolutely impossible. Which leads us to our second method of achieving the impossible. Many long-sought goals for humanity have been rejected as impossible, not because it was deemed that they violate the laws of the universe, but rather because they were seen to violate human nature. certain intractable problems must always be with us, it was argued. A great example of one of these would be slavery. In the days of ancient Rome, or any of the ancient empires, to suggest that a major world economy could exist that wasn't built on the back of slaves would be to talk complete nonsense. The ancient Romans would tell you that, yes, you might have a world without slavery, but not a civilized world. Slaves were fundamental to the establishment of civilization. Without slaves, they would tell you, civilization was simply not possible. Today, we live in a world which is unfortunately not completely clean from the stain of human slavery. The institution does still exist in both its traditional form and in some pretty horrifying variations enabled by more modern market demands. There are human rights groups that exist exclusively to monitor slavery, and obviously they do important work. But no one would seriously suggest that the institution of slavery, as it exists today, is in any way necessary to our civilization. If anything, it's a force that works against civilization. Our world knows marvels of construction and production that leave anything accomplished by ancient Rome or any of the ancient civilizations quite literally in the dust. We live in a world that does not need human slavery. We live in a world in which slavery can be, and one day will be, fully and finally abolished. And slavery is not alone. I've noted many times on Fast Forward Radio that, contrary to what people might be inclined to believe, all indications are that human beings have become less prone to violence and therefore less subject to be victims of violence over the past 50,000 years or so. Our hunter-gatherer ancestors were far, far more likely to die at the hands of a fellow human being than their modern counterparts. Even when you take the kind of massive carnage that occurred in the 20th century into consideration, the two world wars, the Holocaust, the Cultural Revolution, Stalin, Pol Pot, all of it, people living in that century were less likely to be killed by another human being than were those living in far earlier eras. As difficult as it may be to believe, the trend is away from violence and exploitation. Human beings are, over time, becoming more accepting of each other and less likely to lash out at each other. Of course, there are obvious glaring exceptions to these trends, but these are the trends. Now, anyone can tell you that war is a fact of human existence and that it has always been with us and will always be with us. And quite simply, anyone can be wrong. It is possible to massively reduce the amount of violence that occurs on this planet, and some would say that that's happening naturally now. And it is possible that war can, and one day will, be eliminated. And while we're at it, poverty. And let's throw in all forms of human exploitation just for good measure. Eliminating these long-standing, seemingly intractable problems is not impossible. We can achieve these impossible outcomes. Now, let's look at one last way we can achieve the impossible. Last week, I provided a definition of the possible. A possible outcome is one that is not precluded by the physical laws of the universe as we understand them. Clearly, the two ways of achieving the impossible that I just described don't require rewriting the laws of physics. Any impossible technological or social accomplishments that we pull off are clearly not really impossible by that definition of the word. They are simply true possibilities that have been mislabeled as impossible, in the same way that Lord Kelvin mislabeled heavier-than-air flight. So, what about really achieving the impossible? Last week I gave two examples of accomplishments that really are impossible, or at least that we have no choice but to label as such for now. The examples were traveling backward through time and visiting parallel universes. Those activities are impossible. So the big question is, does the age of the impossible somehow provide us the means to achieve them anyway? The answer is yes. Sort of. Here's the thing about living in a universe, even a really nice universe like the one we've got here. If there are some aspects of that universe's physical laws that you don't like, there's not much you can do about it. Except, well, you could build your own universe, one that has laws you like a lot better. I'm talking about simulated worlds here, virtual worlds. Virtual worlds could have a timeline that goes in either direction, allowing participants to move backward and forward in time. Plus, it would be very easy to provide occupants of a virtual world access to any interesting parallel world that they'd like to visit. Additionally, simulated worlds would give us the ability to model the past of our own universe, or to visit variations of our universe. Since these simulations aren't truly our past, nor are they true parallel universes, Achieving these impossible destinations would be entirely possible via simulation. At that point, the only question becomes one of how realistic, how detailed, and how accurate our simulated worlds might be. In the end, how reflective might they be of our real past or of our alternate worlds? It may not be possible to answer that second question. We may one day, through highly advanced computing, be able to create simulations that we know are, to all intents and purposes, accurate renderings either of our past or of parallel worlds. Or it may be impossible to know for sure that these simulations are accurate, meaning that we'll have to settle for the best guess as to what the past or a parallel world might be like. Of course, if you buy into the many worlds hypothesis, then any simulated variation of our world would be bound to be a fairly accurate reflection of some parallel world somewhere. But what about that first question? How detailed and realistic might these simulations be? One day soon, we will have full immersion virtual reality that will provide a completely realistic subjective experience of anything we might care to experience. Full immersion VR is a great workaround for providing scenarios that are technically possible in the real world, but that might be impractical to achieve. For example, last week, when enumerating things that were unlikely sounding but possible, I mentioned the idea of people flying through the air under their own power, like Superman. That is something that is technically possible, and that I do believe people will eventually do. But I think human flying, and many other outrageous activities like it, is likely to be practiced a lot more in virtual worlds than the real world, just because it's easier to implement in a virtual world. However, full immersion VR is not the be-all and end-all of realistic simulations. One day, we may be able to implement simulated universes that are, in a sense, self-contained, and the inhabitants of which have no idea are in a simulation. Obviously, as we've discussed in the past, our universe itself could be such a world. And it occurs to me that if our world is a simulation, one aspect of it that has always been troubling makes a little more sense now. A question that is often asked in theological debates is, why is there so much suffering in the world? The standard answer is free will. But I think a simulated universe spawns a slightly different answer. The designers of a simulated world know that their own story is a long, arduous struggle against the limits of the possible. Without that struggle, they would not be there. They would not exist. So, in creating our world, these designers realized that we would also need sharply defined limits to what's possible, and that we would need difficult, seemingly intractable problems to come up against. Without those limits, without those problems, without those hardships, there would be no incentive for people to build simulated worlds or to build technology of any kind. Arguably, there would be no incentive for life to develop beyond the simplest of forms, if that. So, why is there so much suffering in the world? So that we would be motivated to come up against the limits of the possible and ultimately transcend them. Please join us Monday evening for our archive show. Stephen and I doing a grab bag show from March 2008. We're talking about arming giant robots and other unlikely scenarios. On Wednesday on the live show, we're going to be very pleased to welcome special guest David Asprey. He's going to be talking about a talk that he gave at the recent Bill conference. It's called The Upgraded Self. So if you're interested in upgrading yourself, and I think we all should be, you're not going to want to miss that. 1 week from tonight, we'll be back with Part 11 of The World Transformed 1.5. I hope you'll be able to join us for all of these upcoming programs. And until next time, live to see it.